This is As a Matter of Faith, a program presenting an array of religious scholars and leaders discussing significant and current matters of religious interest. As a Matter of Faith is produced in the studios of WUSM Public Radio at the University of Southern Mississippi with the support of the College of Arts and Letters, the School of Mass Communication and Journalism, and the Department of Philosophy and Religion. Your host for As a Matter of Faith, Dr. Alan Eichelman.
Hello and welcome to As a Matter of Faith. I am Dr. Alan Eichelman of the Department of Philosophy and Religion at the University of Southern Mississippi, and I have with me in the studio today Dr. Jamie Ayton of the Department of Psychology. Dr. Ayton is Assistant Professor of Psychology here at the University of Southern Mississippi, and he is also the Assistant Director of the Health and Mental Health Task Force for the Hurricane Katrina Research Center. Dr. Ayton holds his PhD from Indiana State University, and he has an upcoming book that he is co-editing with Mark Leach called Spirituality and the Therapeutic Process. And Dr. Ayton, could you tell me a little bit about that book to begin with? Could you tell me when it's coming out and who's publishing it?
That particular text will be coming out in this August to September. We're still working on a release date. And that book will be published by American Psychological Association Books. And it's really a guide for mental health professionals on how to work sensitively with spiritual issues and spiritual topics in counseling and psychotherapy. And it takes a start-to-finish approach. So looking first with the therapist of their own experiences with spirituality and their own views of spirituality to how do you initially talk about spirituality and counseling with clients all the way through the various treatment stages and even in the termination process.
Wow, that's very comprehensive. Currently, Dr. Ayton's research is focusing, as you can hear, on the psychology of religion. And in particular, he's looking at the effect of Hurricane Katrina and how Katrina has affected the role of religion, how it has affected the role of mental health with an eye to the collaboration of clergy and mental health professionals in any form of post-disaster situation. And first of all, we're going to be talking about images of God, because I found this very interesting, Dr. Ayton, how people coming out of this disaster employ their particular image of God as a psychological resource in terms of dealing with their post-traumatic stress. So I found that incredibly interesting and to the point, because not all people deal with those images exactly the same. There's many different images of God out there. And one of the things that it seems that your research indicates is that various images of God can have a positive effect on one's sense of well-being following a major disaster. Is that correct?
That's definitely correct. I've always been very fascinated by the role of religion and spirituality in individuals' lives and the lens that that provides for us in terms of our interpretation of our life experiences. And one of the researches or some of the literature in the psychology of religion research shows that our view of God has been connected to various mental health and physical health outcomes. And then shortly after Katrina, I started just listening and began hearing different people tell stories of their Katrina experience. And one of the things that was very common that I heard individuals talking about was the role of God in Katrina. For some individuals, I heard them talk about God was their lifesaver, that it was, you know, their faith in God that really helped pull them through their Hurricane Katrina experience and the loss that they suffered. But at the same time, I also heard other individuals who talked about, well, maybe God sent Hurricane Katrina here for as a punishment, for example. I heard one individual speak of this and was able to start just being mindful of the way that people were viewing and making attributions to God after Katrina. So shortly with that as our backdrop, I was sitting with my research team and we began talking about possible different studies. And so we began to formulate a study to start doing in-depth interviews with individuals along the coast to try to get an idea of what their views of God were following Hurricane Katrina. And this particular study that you've highlighted, we did this about 2 months after the storm.
in terms of the various images, and I maybe just read the images that came forth through this study, God is omnipresent. And what does that mean?
Individuals were reporting that their belief was that God was everywhere after Hurricane Katrina. That, as one person was talking about, that they felt much closer to God and felt that God was there with them during that storm.
What about God is omnipotent? That's another one that you had.
Here, individuals were telling us that many of them were viewing God as being all-knowing and that there must have been some reason that Hurricane Katrina must have happened.
Okay. Not only all-knowing, but probably also all-powerful then.
Definitely.
Kind of the God that is definitely in control. And I would take it that if they were saying that there was some reason for it happened, that did they find some kind of meaning in that in spite of the tremendous devastation? Is that what your study would indicate?
Yes, a lot of our participants did report that. And I do want to also add the caveat that there were some individuals that really did struggle to find meaning from Hurricane Katrina. Okay. So the view of God that was reported was very multifaceted, mm-hmm. Ranging from a very kind of positive and powerful continuum and viewing God very loving, to the opposite end of the spectrum of viewing God more of a judge and almost having more of a punishing role. So I did want to just show that there was this vast continuum of God images reported after Katrina with the individuals we interviewed. But in terms of some of the positive lessons that people reported learning, one was that seeing that it made them realize how much of their life was consumed by materialism, and saying that Katrina really helped them to start to place more value on the relationships with others and also the relationships with their personal faith and with the sacred.
Well, as one who personally went through the storm, I know that one of the things my wife and I kept saying to each other is that tells you how much all of this stuff does not matter in relationship to, you know, just having each other and having our animals that we love that we were able to save. And so it was like the stuff can all be replaced, but we can't replace that easily one another, you know. So there was that sense that I could affirm personally. And I think a lot of us felt that way.
And also kind of following on that was also this kind of sense of renewed hope in humanity that a lot of individuals reported. And they were able to cite examples of how other people, for instance, some of them talked about that they had neighbors in their community that they'd never met before. But then one person that I spoke with was telling the story of they remember as the storm was coming and the rains were pouring down, they got in their car and they were hoping to try to outdrive the storm coming in. And suddenly, as soon as they got on the road, they realized they'd made a mistake. You know, they couldn't see anything. But out of the rain with the windshield wipers going, they could see an image off the side of the road. And there was one of their neighbors that was holding a sign that they had spray painted on. And the sign said, you know, stop here. And that person was standing out in the rain trying to catch others to be able to come into their home for safety and opening that up to strangers just passing along on the road. So a lot of people spoke of this, also this renewed sense of hope in humanity and being able to connect with others in their local communities and even neighborhoods, to even the larger sense of community that established, having individuals sharing stories of individuals coming from New York and Oregon and all across the country and even some internationally to come provide relief.
Now, did they relate that to God, or did they see that as separate in some way, shape, or form, or both?
Depending on their views typically prior to Katrina is how that got filtered through. So if an individual was a person of faith and that was the lens that they were looking through prior to Katrina, Katrina seemed to kind of reinforce a person's religious belief system. So if they viewed that sense of help coming from others from God, that was reestablished during Katrina. And a lot of individuals that we spoke with did make those attributions to God, that it was God working through those people, sending them directly to the coast to help them. Mm-hmm. Or others even saying that they felt that they could see the love of God in people that were offering that help.
And others, I would take it, maybe not. I mean,
exactly.
So they would still have a positive view of humanity that would be reinforced.
Right. Yeah. For instance, couple of the individuals that we spoke to were atheists and some also that were agnostic. And in talking with them, they maybe did not attribute it to God, but they still talked about how they could see that some of the individuals who came, particularly some of those from faith groups, that they could see how that person's faith and that person's belief in God is what brought them to the coast to offer that altruistic help, and that they were very grateful for it. So even maybe they didn't share similar beliefs, they were very thankful for that sense of altruism that they knew for those people on an individual level came from their belief in the sacred or the divine.
Very interesting. Very interesting. One of the things that that you noted in your study was that people had this idea. Some people had this idea of God as judge, and I would have maybe naturally thought, almost automatically thought, that that would have been negative in terms of an image for recovery. And my guess is, from what you said, that that was indeed negative for some people, but not necessarily for all people that were even directly affected by the storm, that some people found that as a psychological resource for their recovery, viewing a judgmental God. Could you explain that? Because that seems to be almost counterintuitive.
Well, I think if somebody has the clear answer onto that, they will probably have their own book coming out. but I'll do my best just to try to volley that back. In terms of responding to that, one of the things that was really interesting, that even though a number of our participants talked about viewing God as a judge, God never judged them personally. So by that meaning that God saved them. So maybe participant living in house A lost their house, and their neighbor down the road lost their house. Well, God spared them, but maybe that neighbor was being punished for something that they were doing wrong in their life. So they never experienced negative judgment in terms of their own conceptualization of their own experience. So judgment, in terms of a harsh judgment, was always reserved for someone else. And so from that, now this wasn't very many participants that talked about this, but it was interesting just to see that they were highlighting God as a judge, but felt that even maybe in their own life that there was something that they could gain from it, from watching how other people handled and experienced Katrina.
Now, did you have anyone who did experience tremendous loss and still said, well, it was God's judgment not on me, but on the culture or something else, and I was just collateral damage? Did you have anyone?
Definitely. There were some of those reports. For example, I can remember one participant that we interviewed talked about that the reason that this happened, and once again, this was not my perspective, but this was something that a participant in our study had said, was that, well, it happened because of the gambling on the coast. So there was one participant that was blaming it on the gaming. And then another person was talking about issues of how saying that the larger culture was moving away from God and moving away from faith, and that that was another reason why the storm was sent here. And so that my experience was just that of collateral damage, that this was being done as kind of a wake-up call.
Oh, okay. So there was that element as well. And it was, like I said, it was very surprising that they found people actually using that image in a positive way, because I think so many people associate the judgmental God with something that's negative. And in fact, I think you also mentioned there were people who, for instance, didn't see God as necessarily being all-powerful in relationship to the storm, and therefore, you know, not necessarily a judging God, but still a God that's helpful, even though maybe not all-powerful. And those may be the ones, in some cases, who had a sense of the loving Father of God. You know, the loving Father couldn't prevent this, but he can kind of still console me somehow. Is that correct, too? Did you get that kind of image?
Yeah, we'd been kind of focusing here on that kind of negative end of the continuum, talking about the judgmental view of God. But on the opposite end, on that more positive view, a lot of the participants did talk about literally viewing God as kind of almost a biological loving father figure, mm-hmm. and would talk about experiences where they literally felt as they were maybe, you know, in the corner of their home and, you know, they hear the trees snapping and the wind's blowing, of feeling this sense of calmness for just this kind of short period of time where it just felt as though there was this sense of kind of a divine arms just being wrapped around them and for just a moment gave them a sense of safety and security. So some talked about these kind of peak spiritual experiences where they actually felt connected to the divine in those moments. For other individuals, it was more intellectual, that they were able to use their understanding of God to be able to help make meaning out of this and realize saying things to the extent of, well, if this occurred, God must be doing this because he loves me and he's wanting me to grow from this. Recently attended a talk down on the coast recently and heard someone talking about the friendship oak there on the coast and talking about on that day that the roots grew deeper after Hurricane Katrina. And so there were a lot of individuals that spoke of those same type of experiences that God was helping to grow their roots, their spiritual roots, so to speak.
Hmm. It's interesting that you mentioned the Friendship Oak because for those of us at the Gulf Coast campus, that, of course, is a significant symbol of of USM and its recovery, because it did continue to stand strong after the storm. And I think it did have a positive spiritual effect. I know the local newspaper said it was the thing that people most ask about, you know, after the storm was, is the Friendship Oak still standing? So I think that does have what you're saying is true, a kind of a interesting way that that becomes a kind of spiritual symbol, if you will. It also strikes me that what you're saying is that there tends to be those who think of God as near and those who think of God as far off. And not that either one of these images is right or wrong, but just different ways of viewing God or perceiving or experiencing God. But those two different ways seem to have consequences in terms of how people view their faith as a psychological resource. Would you want to talk about that just in general to conclude this segment?
Most of the participants did fall kind of into two camps, like what you're talking about, that God was either very close to them or further away. And once again, you can almost relate that directly to that continuum we spoke of earlier, that those who view God closer typically viewed God in a more positive way. Those who view God viewed God more distant typically fell more on kind of the negative resource end of viewing God. But at the same time, almost all of our participants talked at some point during the storm where they did have a period where God did feel distant, that all of them talked about that at some point through their Hurricane Katrina experience that they did question God, and they did question, why is this happening? And for some of those individuals, it was very short-lived, and immediately was able to overcome that and to be able to fall back to more positive view, where some individuals said that they've not been able to stop making those questions and have fallen more towards that kind of negative view or relationship with God. And in terms of mental health and physical health, one of the things that we also found was that those who have a more positive view and use God as a coping resource, not meaning not to minimize viewing God, but those who would rely on God and feel that God was joining with them to help them through the experience fared much better in terms of physical and mental health outcomes.
Well, I'd like to thank Dr. Ayton. We'll be right back, by the way, with more questions for Dr. Ayton after this break.
You are listening to As a Matter of Faith. Our guest this week is Dr. Jamie Ayton. To share your comments and suggestions for future programs with us, please send your emails to wusm@usm.edu. This is episode number one of As a Matter of Faith.
Yes, and welcome back to As a Matter of Faith. We have with us in the studio today Dr. Jamie Ayton, Assistant Professor of Psychology at the University of Southern Mississippi. We have been talking to Dr. Ayton about his recent research as it is related to hurricane recovery and how that hurricane recovery has affected people's images of God. We're going to be shifting gears here a little bit now and talking to Dr. Ayton about some of his work actually in mental health related to all of this, how for all of this works in terms of his work with the Clergy Disaster Mental Health Summit that's coming up in Biloxi and in about a month or so, and how this relates to his work with the Interfaith Disaster Task Force on the Gulf Coast. And we're going to ask, what kind of training are you doing for mental health and mental health collaboration following all of this marvelous research, Dr. Ayton?
Well, one of the things that I felt very fortunate about was working with my colleague, Dr. Sharon Topping, from the University of Southern Mississippi, and we were able to receive a grant from the Institute for Improvement of Minority Geographic Health and Health Disparities through the University of Mississippi Medical Center. And through that grant, we were able to start first looking at what were the needs for clergy along the Mississippi Gulf Coast. So we began by specifically working with African-American pastors along the coast, and we're asking them what were their mental health needs that they were noticing, and what were the obstacles to mental health services in that area. And as a result of those in-depth interviews that we were conducting, the pastors over and over again were saying, we need more training along the issues of disaster mental health. And not only within the African-American churches, but also in the interviews and conversations that we were having with pastors from all different backgrounds and religious faiths as well. And so one of the things that we did then was we very much have a belief that research should never be conducted just for research's sake, but that research should be done and then given back to the communities to help empower communities. So as a result of that, we were able to write a grant to develop the Church Disaster Mental Health Project through the Pew Charitable Trust and Ringgold States Policy Institute. And that particular project was our first training project that we were working on. And we have a website right now that's up, and that website's the churchdisasterhelp.org. And on that particular website, it offers a number of online training opportunities for faith leaders. And for instance, on there, we have about 60 different online trainings, from recognizing suicide after a disaster to providing spiritual care after a disaster. We also have a number of fact sheets, approximately 70, such as how does a church go about developing a continuity plan? How do you develop a preparedness plan? So we also have a number of those fact sheets available, as well as about 40 different online training manuals for different religious providers to be able to utilize. And then in addition to the online training that we're providing, we also worked with Interfaith Disaster Task Force, and they are providing a great service coming up here on June 11th and June 12th. And the Mississippi Coast Interfaith Disaster Task Force is providing a two-day mental health summit. And I've been able to help serve on that planning committee. And they are going to be having three different tracks. One track is for religious professionals and clergy. Another track is for mental health professionals. And then also one for school counselors. And a large part of this conference that is going to be put on is not only how to address disaster mental health issues, but also how can we begin to work together to be able to bring mental health and clergy together to be able to respond to the overwhelming mental health needs that we're seeing along the Gulf Coast. Also, we provided a training back in October and had a pastoral skills development conference, and had a number of clergy from the coast there and talked about issues of depression and resource loss and dealing with trauma, as well as working with family problems after Hurricane Katrina.
Okay. I could see what you're doing here as being not only a tremendous resource following any kind of disaster, but in terms of just a day-to-day practice for mental health professionals on the coast, having this kind of this web, this network that will allow people to really communicate with one another and serve in terms of referrals. Would you like to talk about that a little bit?
Definitely. On the website, for instance, one of the topics that clergy were also saying was that they wanted to know who to refer to. So on this website, you can actually go, and we have a list pulled together of various mental health professionals on the coast who are providing services. And so we're trying to make that information more accessible to religious communities on the coast. We also are trying to provide information. A lot of the clergy were saying that they wanted to be able to have files that, you know, when they were talking to somebody, they wanted to be able to have notes available to them to be able to, okay, when this person's talking to me, are these symptoms of depression, or maybe are these symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder? And if I'm able to kind of recognize that, then maybe I can be able to make a more informed decision of whether or not I need to refer that person for mental health services. So there's that type of information too to help facilitate that relationship, hoping that clergy will begin to refer more to mental health professionals. And likewise, our goal is that we hope that mental health professionals will also begin to refer more to religious leaders for, say, spiritual care or spiritual guidance, for example, which is something that a lot of individuals on the coast are seeking right now.
One of the things that I'm aware of, at least within certain segments of both the mental health community and the clergy community, that there has been a kind of historic distrust of the other. Among certain mental health professionals, a distrust of certain clergy, and vice versa, for that matter. Have you encountered that? Have you experienced that? And what have you done to overcome that?
Well, that's a very good point that you make. And in fact, when we first began doing our interviews, one of the things that we wanted to do was to try to shine light on what are some of those obstacles to collaboration between the clergy and mental health professionals. And this is something that's not unique just to the state of Mississippi. This is something that has long roots in the entire history of psychology and religion, that both groups over different periods have been suspicious of one another. Though that's definitely improving, there's still a lot of that stigma, so to speak. And some of the examples of obstacles that we found, one was just lack of previous experience with one another, or that maybe somebody had had a negative experience and were therefore hesitant to make referrals in the future. There was also a lot of stigma. In fact, in our interview protocol, we did not actually use the word stigma, but it came up so much that we're actually going to be writing a paper on just sources of stigma within faith communities. And some of those areas of stigma, one was, for example, very deep-rooted, that a lot of the churches were talking about that there were a lot of elders in their faith communities that had seen negative experiences of mental health treatment maybe 30 years ago and weren't aware of maybe some of the advances that had occurred, but some of that stigma was still being passed down to younger generations. But in terms of what can be done, one of the unique opportunities, I think, was created by Katrina, that after Katrina, you saw a lot of faith groups and mental health professionals working together, and they had to work together to be able to overcome some of the obstacles. And what our faith leaders were telling us was, well, you know, I worked with this psychiatrist, and he was okay, so maybe other psychiatrists are okay as well. And they had stories, for example, of one particular church was talking about that there was a group of psychiatrists from somewhere up in the Northeast who had literally rented a trailer and just drove down this trailer and set up in the church parking lot and said, we're here to talk to anybody that we can. And the psychiatrists, as they were getting ready to leave, stopped and thanked the church leaders and said, you know, we came down here to help you, and what we found is you helped us, and that we were so moved by this experience and want you to know how powerful the resilience we've seen, and just want to thank you as well. So I think that we have a really unique opportunity right now to help facilitate that collaboration. Some other examples that clergy said that would help them to be able to establish a relationship would be if mental health professionals would establish liaisons, that they would like to be able to know that if I want to make a referral to mental health center X, Y, and Z over here, that I can call and know that Joe Smith, for example, is going to pick up, and that I trust Joe, and I know that Joe's going to make sure that my congregation members get the best treatment possible. So they were also looking for this kind of liaison experience. And also additional education and training, that they felt that Hurricane Katrina really opened their eyes to a lot of mental health issues, and that they felt additional training would help them to be able to take even more advantage of some of the services that are out there.
One of the things that I noted in the research paper you did on the African-American church was that there are certain members within the African-American church that do attach a kind of stigma to seeking any kind of mental health assistance. Are you finding ways to have utilize the pastors in that process to help their members overcome that stigmatization? Is that something that's taking place, or is that something you hope to take place? And if so, how do you envision that?
Well, I really think that the pastors are really key. That and too, just want to point out that the stigma with mental health, I think, is not just unique to African American church communities, but to most faith communities, and that. To overcome that, I think it's almost like any organization. We tend to oftentimes take on characteristics of our leaders. So if we have a good leader in business, we tend to oftentimes, or at least we hope, will adopt some of those positive qualities. And you've probably also been in different organizations where you've seen negative leadership, and suddenly you see that kind of filtering throughout. Well, I think that pastors who have a positive view of mental health and recognize the importance of mental health issues, those pastors oftentimes I've seen have congregations that are also more open, and also have a unique avenue through the pulpit to be able to raise different issues about mental health or emotional well-being, and also, very importantly, about spiritual well-being after a disaster.
And those rituals can be, as you said, incredibly varied in terms of their expression. So people need to reach out and rely on those forms of ritualization that speak to them, is what I hear you saying. What other surprises are you finding in relationship to your work in the Interfaith Disaster Task Force? What kind of things would you say that maybe, you know, I didn't expect to find that? What would you say would be something of that nature?
Well, the Interfaith Disaster Task Force, I feel very fortunate that I've been able to work with them and do some research. And I've just been amazed by watching that organization work on the coast, that they've been able to pull together groups of people that I think most people would be surprised that just how well they're able to get people together and talking. And they've really acted as a conduit for bringing people from all different faiths, all different backgrounds and cultures and professions. Well, just recently, I know on the coast, they had held a case management conference and looking at the impact of Katrina and the need for affordable housing. So here they are bringing together individuals from all over the state, from mental health. You had clergy there. You had case management workers there. You even had some individuals that were hoping to understand how they could get resources for their homes. And I do want to make sure that, that it's recognized that I'm not a member of the Interfaith Disaster Task Force, and that that's a group on the coast who's just doing incredible work. So I want to make sure not to take credit for what they're doing. Yeah.
You're consulting
but
with
yes.
them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. Listen, I really want to thank Dr. Eaton for being with us today. It's been fantastic. If you've got any questions or comments, please contact us here at WUSM, which you can access through usm.edu. And we really hope, Dr. Eaton, that you'll be back with us again, because I know we've got a lot more to talk about. And so thank you very much. And as for now, well, that's Speaking as a Matter of Faith.
This has been As a Matter of Faith, produced in the studios of WUSM at the University of Southern Mississippi, with the support of the College of Arts and Letters, the School of Mass Communication and Journalism, and the Department of Philosophy and Religion. Your host for As a Matter of Faith, Dr. Alan Eichelman. Producer, Jeff Rossier. Please share your comments and suggestions by emailing us at wusm@usm.edu.